At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
To the old me, scared and unseen, you're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive. Turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes of the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This is the voice I found. For those who lost their voice, I sing it loud.
I keep it real, keep it purpose bound. Every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place. It's a call to every soul who wants to be free.
A song for- welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Edna White, your host on Keeping It Real on Purpose. This is the place for an in-depth conversation about your life, purpose, and personal wellness in every aspect of your life. We talk about real life issues to develop life and your relationships and certainly your business on purpose. We keep it real so that you know we are real. Today on the show, we're excited to have Justin Williams, who is the author of In the Eye of the Father. Welcome, Justin, to Keeping It Real on Purpose.
Thank you, Edna. Thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate you taking the time to spend a little time with me today. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm excited. So when I'm excited, my audience is excited. Like I told you earlier, I read your book during meditation. And within an hour. So I have pages turned down, and I just wanted to start by just introduce us to In the Eye of the Father.
Absolutely. So In the Eye of the Father, a memoir of faith and redemption, is my personal story, my life story. And it was published last November, and I wanted to write a book initially for it to be used as a template, right?
Right.
To help others that have gone through issues, have had traumatic experiences, etc., and to give them an idea of maybe something different or something that they've, you know, never heard of or not too familiar with.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I experienced a lot of trauma at the hands of my biological father as a child.
Okay.
And definitely want to provide readers with a template to help them get through or heal from their traumatic experiences. What I didn't realize before I started, and I did realize once I got into it with the writing, et cetera, is it actually became a healing piece for me.
Oh, yeah.
And it also, yeah, absolutely. And it brought about a lot of closure as well.
Yes.
With regarding some questions I had. And I think to sum it up, if I had one sentence, it's located on the back of my book at the very top. It says the first step of understanding who we will become comes at the death of who we were. right? Ooh. And that is a statement that has always resonated with me, and I had ideas of what that would feel like at one point. But it's much greater than I could have ever imagined.
Okay.
You know, just to take it back to before I was born, when my mom was pregnant with me, she had a vision that her and my father were, you know, riding in a hearse.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, this black blob, if you will, covers the entire vehicle.
Wow.
And that startled my mom. It really did. And she got scared. And the first thing she thought, obviously, was, wow, I'm gonna die, or I'm going to have some type of complication during this birth.
Right.
So fast forward a few months later, June 8th, 1978, she's in labor in the hospital. And I was a pretty big baby. I was almost 10 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And she had a very, very difficult time with the delivery. The doctor, I wouldn't drop down and into the birth canal. And her doctor had her do this maneuver where he had her bring her knees to her chest and then begin a rocking motion.
Right.
Well, that was the worst thing that he could have had her do.
Ever.
Because what happened was her uterus ruptured and she began to bleed out. And while she was laying on the table in the delivery room, there was a mirror on the ceiling, and then she saw all this blood, and she really freaked out, and the doctor got scared, and he had to contact the head OBGYN of the hospital, and that doctor was finally able to deliver me, and I had to go to ICU, and my mom had to go get a couple blood transfusions, so it was about a solid week before I actually met my mom for the first time.
Right.
You know, if you think about childbirth, a woman carries a child for 9 months. It's very, very important for that child to be able to bond immediately with that mother.
Absolutely.
You know, but I didn't have that opportunity, you know. So that was huge, and I didn't realize that until I got into the writings of this book.
Right.
But fast forward a couple years later, from my earliest memories were probably when I was about 3 or 4 years old. I probably said about 4 years old. And I always thought that we had a pretty natural and good life for what I knew at that time, right?
Right.
My parents were from the Metro Detroit area. My father worked for General Motors. And my mom, she worked for the Army. She was a civilian employee for the Army. She was very fortunate in her career, and she did very well. I remember a story she tells from time to time. She taught, she went to D.C. to the Pentagon and taught high-ranking military officials on diversity.
Okay.
And, this was like the early mid-80s, so you can imagine what that was like.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Being an African-American woman.
Yeah, I can imagine.
High-ranking military officials telling them about diversity. They weren't trying to hear it, and I'm putting that kindly. So, the earliest recollection I have of experiencing trauma was when I was about 5 years old.
Okay.
And I remember my brother and I, we used to stay at home by ourselves for a couple hours. So my mom went into work about 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, got home about 5. My dad went in around noon and got home late at night. And I remember the thing was, don't go outside. My brother and I went outside, and we saw that. We went outside and played the house to play with our friends.
Right.
10, 15 minutes outside, we see him pulling up. We get scared. We run in the house.
Sounds familiar.
yeah. And, you know, back in the day, early 80s, 70s, they had those, man, those belts were probably about 3-4 inches thick.
Oh, yeah. They were real leather.
My father definitely wore sporty belts, wore those all the time. And I remember he came in the house. He was so upset. He stripped us down to our trousers, our underwear, and
wow.
I'll tell you what, he let us have it.
Right.
We were, and this went on for about 20, maybe 30 minutes, and the guy was four.
Wow.
My brother was about 5 or 6, and I remember when it was all said and done, I had these bruises and these welts across my entire body, my legs, my back. And one scene I remember very vividly is when he... for about 3 to 5 minutes. So these are these traumatic experiences that I'm having. Then soon after that, I'd say about a year after that, he and my mother, they got into a really bad argument.
Right.
And
Yeah.
He hit her. And my brother and I, we ran and we hid and we saw him go to the kitchen to grab a knife. And then he chased her out the house with the knife. And then I remember he came back in about a minute later, put all of the kitchen knives into a bag and then went looking for her.
Oh, wow.
And he was gone for about 20, 30 minutes. And then I remember my mom came back in the house and said, hurry, hurry, boys, hurry. We got to pack. We're going to go to Toledo to live with your sister and your brother-in-law. And we had a police drive us to this donut shop. And we waited there until my sister picked us up. And I remember my father's mother, my grandmother, telling me about that night because he had stopped to call her. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm going to kill Eunice. I'm going to kill her. I'm tired of this. And then she talked him down. She told him, you know what, Jesse, if you kill Eunice, then your children are going to grow up without a father. And I knew you love your boys because she's going to be dead and you're going to be going to prison for life.
Right.
And that's not fair to them. So thank God that she was able to talk him down.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we moved to Toledo, Ohio. And, you know, I started a new school, lived with my sister and her family. Then my mom bought a house in Toledo. And then, unfortunately, I had another traumatic event happen when I was about 7,
right,
8 years old,
uh-huh,
in Ohio, where my older brother, he was about 21, 22 at the time. He had a drug addiction at the time. And this is maybe mid-80s. And you think back then, late 70s, early 80s, you know, crack cocaine hit our neighborhoods.
Yeah, very hard. Yeah, very hard.
Yeah, very hard. The you know, I won't get into too much, but I believe that was a planned effort by the federal government.
Oh, please, yes.
CIA.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, as a young black man, he fell victim to that lifestyle. And I remember he came home very high one day. My brother and I were home by ourselves, and he accused us of stealing $700 of his money. He said he left it in his car. He said we went out there and took it out of his car, and we said, oh man, we didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you what, he grabbed an extension cord and he went to work on us for a solid 20-30 minutes.
Wow.
I just remember running through the house and he's just beating us on the head, on the face, on our backs, on our legs.
Mm-hmm.
High on crack, you know, doing this.
Right.
So that was another traumatic experience. And you know, all of these traumatic experiences that I experienced that caused me to shut down, you know,
right,
and not know how to express myself. And I,
mm-hmm,
became this introverted kid.
Mm-hmm.
And just to go back to my father while living with him, because, you know, obviously we lived with him before the move to Ohio, but we wound up living with him again right around, I think I was about 9, 10 years old, right before I started middle school.
Right.
And, you know, he was very controlling. He was a military man as well. He did some,
right,
time in the Marines. And,
mm-hmm,
his mantra, you know, was a child is to be seen and not heard. And,
right,
he was very controlling. And I didn't have the opportunity to express myself, to think for myself, and to learn how to think through different things, because he was just always there. It was, you know, my way or the highway type,
right,
situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, so all of this trauma and his controlling, dominating ways really caused me to shut down. Became this fearful kid, this quiet kid, didn't know the first thing about expressing himself, right? And so this caused issues in school. I never wanted to go to school because I was frightened to be able to talk to other kids, or,
right,
frightened to be able to stand in front of the classroom and talk to, and you know, give a presentation or a speech or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there again, these traumatic experiences. I remember in middle school, my parents got back together, and my father lived with us when I'm 6th through 8th grade, and you know, this was a really hard time, probably the most challenging time living with him.
Uh-huh.
And just to give a little bit more backdrop on my dad, he was also an alcoholic, which made things, you know, even worse. You know, I always like to tell people he had this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, I should say, personality.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be this complete evil type person, but on the other hand, probably the nicest guy you would ever want to meet. Just, you know, would give you the shirt off his back type of person, you know. Like, everyone that knew him just had nothing but praise to speak, you know, when talking about him. But,
right.
You know, I remember in middle school, one very traumatic event that happened was, this was the summertime, and he told me to make sure I took a shower by the,
uh-huh,
time he got home at night, because he got home around 11, 12 o'clock at night. And I said, all right, Dad. So I remember hearing this car pull up, looking out the window, and my heart started to race because I knew I hadn't taken my shower. I'd spent all day, day and night playing. And first thing he did when he walked in the house, said, Justin, did you shower? I said, no, Dad. So he pulls me by my ear, takes me into the bathroom, turns on the sink, the bathroom sink, grabs me by the neck at that point and pushes my head under the water. And the water's just, you know, running through my hair, and then he starts to shampoo it. Then he used to use this product called, hot oil treatment. I think V8 hot oil treatment.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
I remember that.
Yeah, so now with those, what you're supposed to do is just run them under hot water, those vials.
Yeah, warm, just warm that up, heat. Yeah.
Yeah. What he did, he boiled them on the stove,
Okay.
Yeah, and he had about two or three of them. And then he told me, he said, keep your AWS right there. I'll be right back.
Right.
The boy, that came back with that hot oil and just held my head under that water and just poured that boiling oil all over my head.
Wow.
And I couldn't cry because, you know, crying wasn't allowed.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm just holding all this emotion in. And then he finishes with the oil treatment and washing my hair, etc. Then he lets me go by the neck, and then I just fall to the ground. Again, not crying because I couldn't show any emotion like that in front of him. And he says, now get your ass in the shower.
Right.
I said, yes, sir. Mm-hmm. So then I remember getting in the shower, and then once I got in the shower, I couldn't hold it anymore. I just broke down and hollered out, you know.
Yeah.
And just, you know, it burned my scalp so bad that my hair fell out, you know. Couldn't grow the hair there for some time.
Right.
And then I remember one time he jumped on my brother, my older brother Jewel, and did him in pretty bad. He disowned him as his son. It was just a hot mess.
Yeah.
And then once high school started, he moved out. My parents, they tried making it work, but, you know, obviously it didn't. And
yeah.
They went their separate ways. And then I started high school. I'll tell you what, I was wild in high school. You know, always a nice kid, but football was my thing. But as soon as football season was over in December, January, after my freshman year, I started hanging out with people I probably shouldn't have been hanging out with. Most people would say, and doing things I shouldn't have been doing, like drinking and smoking, you know, things like that. And my mom moved to another high school, and just high school was probably, you know, that was definitely the worst school experience of my life. You know, just things didn't go well. I had hopes and dreams of being a football player, and I was pretty good. Had these college offers after my freshman year, and obviously that didn't come.
Right.
But, you know, it was hard, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt so alone, too, because my mom was very busy with work, and then she was into the church as well, and she was always involved in a lot of community activities. And so she just wasn't, you know, and I love my mother dearly. She was a great mom, but she had her life, you know.
Yeah.
It was very hard for her to raise two teenage boys without a male around.
Right.
And so my brother and I got into a lot of different stuff, and then when I was 19, I met a young lady, and we dated for a bit, and she became pregnant, and that's when my first child was born, and Justin. And I tell people all the time about him is that he was my saving grace, because, again, I was running the streets of Detroit and doing things I shouldn't have been doing, but when he was born, that changed everything. I made the decision, hey, I need to be there for him, and it was important to me to be a better father than my father was. Be a better father to him than my father was to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it really settled down. And he and my mother, his mom and I, we dated for a few years, and we went our separate ways. And then I was a single father for many years. And then I met my wife. And, you know, we were married for a few years, and we decided to make a move across the country. And, you know, we made another move to where we are now out here in the Phoenix area.
Uh-huh.
But after we made that move, I always found myself searching, right? And I was one of those kids that was definitely raised in the church. My mom was this licensed evangelist. I was one of those kids that, you know, went to church you know, with faithfully elementary, middle school, three, four, five times a week, etc. Right?
Yes.
And never lost sight of God. Always kept him in my heart, regardless of what I was doing. But I found that my wife and I, we were searching, right? Because Christianity, it just didn't seem to do what it wants, what I thought it should be doing for me.
Right.
We looked into, Nation of Islam. We looked into a lot of different things, nothing quite settled. Mm-hmm. And fast forward to 2020, you know, as we know what happened in 2020 with everything. And so I was laid off work, and I'm sitting at home, and old buddy of mine got in contact with me, a guy I hadn't spoke to, and I've known him for over 20 years, and we would make contact every few years or so, and he starts telling me about spirituality and meditation, angels, and all these different things that I was unfamiliar with, and I started doing these things, the meditation. I started doing a meditation specifically called the Gateway Experience. And, that's a hemisync meditation that uses by Neural Beats.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, I started having all these experiences, and I'm talking out-of-body experiences and astral travel and these different things.
And quantum leaping and all of that. Great.
Quantum leaping, yes, man, you said it. Absolutely. So, you know, and this is much different than how I was raised in the Church of God in Christ, right?
Oh, yeah,
this,
absolutely.
Like, the Church of God, Pentecostal, no, that's the stuff.
That's witchcraft. Stuff, that's witchcraft.
Witchcraft and all this, you know. So I kind of struggled with that at first, but I couldn't deny it because I felt myself changing.
Right, you felt yourself changing.
And this meditation, this spirituality helped me with my healing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And this is why 2020 is where I made this huge transformation.
Yeah.
Huge. You know, the transformation actually started before then, but I guess it did a pivot in 2020 when I was introduced to all this different spirituality things.
Right.
And I started working with Archangel Metatron, also known as Michael from the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's become my guy. Well, he's actually always been here with me. But
absolutely. You just noticed him. You really noticed him.
Exactly. I got this sense of awareness that wasn't there before.
Right.
And then I discovered these other gifts, and I'm going through my healing. And then the Spirit spoke, and they said, keep doing what you're doing. Don't go in another direction.
Right.
You know, since I've done that, I mean, again, going back to what the back of my book says, the first step of understanding who we become comes at the death of who we were.
Yeah.
And that old me, there was a death of the old me, and I'm reborn and renewed.
Right.
Now I'm into helping others and manifesting my future. And
all of that.
And that love is real.
Yes, absolutely.
You know? It's so real.
So I have to unpack all of this. I have to unpack you. You gave me from A to Z, and I really do appreciate the fact that you shared that you noticed a lot of trials and tribulations before that you knew there was trials and tribulations. And that's important because knowing where the traumas are and and being able to root them out is important. And I want to thank you for that. Thank you for the up-to-date to 2020. And I don't want you to go past 2020 right now. Okay, so I want to unpack what you said so that the audience can really understand. And I think going through the book, because now we've got the backdrop of your life. We've got that. And now I have an excerpt from your book. I'm going to start. I'm going to read it. Physical distance was truly meaningless in the world of the spirit. Can you explain that?
I'm sorry. Did you say that one more time?
Physical distance was truly meaningless in the world of the spirit. And this is in the first chapter of The Whispers in the Night.
Yeah, physical distance, yeah. So, you know, one thing I've learned that journey began in 2020 is I learned about the spiritual world, right?
Right.
And I learned that the spiritual world is completely opposite of the world we live in, this realm, this earth we're on.
Right.
I also learned that spiritual warfare is real. You know, you hear about that. I heard about that coming up in church, but
sure,
I have a good understanding of it. I always thought that, okay, you have God fighting Satan or whatever you want to call
them, right?
But I learned that it just goes so much deeper than that, and
how
that this spiritual warfare is going on, not only in my life, not only in your life, right, but in everyone's life, and not only in everyone's life, but on so many different levels as well.
Yeah.
Whether you talk about government, where you talk about media, mm-hmm, where you talk about education, whether you talk about, I mean, you name it, it's there.
Right.
It is there.
Yeah.
So with that being said, knowing that there is a spiritual warfare going on, and knowing that, you know, the spiritual world and this realm we live in are completely, completely different, I then learn that things that go on in this world, on this earth, it actually starts first in the spiritual world.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So this is something that I learned, and that was just like the lifting of the veil, as they say.
Right.
And that really helped me in regards to my healing with dealing with fear,
mm-hmm,
because the spirit put on my heart, letting me know that, hey, first of all, I don't have anything to worry about because I have a purpose and the Father has a plan for me. He's mm-hmm. going to use me for his glory and for his kingdom.
Right.
And that's to be of service to humanity.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I did in 2020 that really helped me break free from the fear issues that I was dealing with that started many years ago.
Right.
Actually started when I was being born, you know.
Yeah.
Because that was a traumatic experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Not only for my mom, but for myself as well. I just came to that realization in 2020. But one of the things that I did was I went skydiving, mm-hmm, right? And, you know, if you would have asked me 2019, even early 2020, would I go up 15, 20,000 feet in a plane and jump?
Right.
I'm like, no, you got the wrong guy.
Yeah.
No, not happening. I don't do things like that. But
right.
I felt led to do it. The spirit spoke and said, you know, you need to do this. And
mm-hmm,
I pushed it away. And it took me a couple months before I finally decided to do it. Because you know what it's like when spirit's just on you about doing something.
Yeah, you have to kind of obey.
Yeah, you having these synchronicities and everything.
Exactly. It lines itself up. Lines right up.
Right. Exactly. And so I did it. I went up in that plane and I jumped. One of the most challenging weeks leading up to that jump that I've ever had. But I did it. And what I realized, or what I learned from doing that, is that you have to deal with fear. There's no going around it. You have to go through it.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it all is that God places the best things in life on the other side of fear.
Yeah.
Right?
Everything.
So I'm not here to say I don't fear anymore, because I do, we all do,
mm-hmm,
but I have a better ability to control that fear, or to fight that fear, if you will,
yep,
which makes life so much easier, which brings a freedom, which brings a liberation, which brings a self-justice,
right,
you know, where you're not a slave to that fear, and that was very instrumental in helping me move on. But, you know, just learning about the spiritual world and learning that I need to be guided by the Spirit to mm-hmm. fulfill my purpose in life. That's where I'm at.
Okay, very good. You talk about the internal world needs balance. In the absence of balance, all sorts of inadequacies can pour out from an individual. What did you mean by that?
Well, the internal world is self. You know, the internal world is self, because we all are experiencing different realities,
okay,
you know. And I truly believe that if one does not have balance, then it definitely will lead to inadequacies.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's very important to have the balance of spirituality in your life, your body, spirit, and mind. Those
right.
are like the top three. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, you know, you have to have the balance if you have a family within your family. You have to have your if you have a career, you have to have your career balanced as well.
Oh,
now, if those three things aren't balanced, then you're gonna have some things. So things aren't just gonna be right, maybe not go right for you, you know, or at least the way that you envision that they should.
Yeah.
You know, but having that balance brings a sense of peace and calming.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It really does. That's been my experience, and from talking with other individuals as
right.
well, that I find that to be true with a lot of others too. So.
Right. Okay. All right. I got that. Now, of course, I've heard you talk about your dad and the trauma that you experienced with him. But in your book, you talk about the effect of your father's absence that it had on you as another layer of trauma. Can you allude to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of goes back to what I said a few minutes ago, my dad having that split personality, if you will, mm-hmm. you know, that Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Right.
You know, and I love my dad. You know, mm-hmm. I still, to this day, he's transitioned many years ago, but, you know, mm-hmm. I love him, and I'm very thankful for the positive things. Well, I'll say this. I'm thankful for everything I experienced with him, mm-hmm. even the trauma. You know, I don't have any regrets about any of it. Now, I do believe that if he was around when I was in high school mm-hmm. and more so after high school, then I probably could have avoided a lot of the issues that I ran into as a young man. Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely believe that it would have made me, you know, better rounded, well-rounded, if you will.
Right.
I'm a huge advocate for both young men and women.
Yeah.
Young men and women of color that look like me. Needing their parents,
right?
Both parents in the home. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work out that way. Mm-hmm. And if it is a single parent situation, single parents do a hell of a job with raising their kids. Mm-hmm. You know, but again, if we talk about that balance, we talk about a child's emotional stability and a child's comfortability. I definitely think that if a parent is around who is a positive influence. Mm-hmm. In that child's life, it is very, very helpful, very beneficial to that child. I learned a lot of great things from my dad. You know, went through mm-hmm. those traumatic experiences, but I learned a lot of great things. I learned what it takes to be a responsible man, a responsible black man. Knowing he dealt with a lot. You know, he was in the service in the 50s. He went in when he was 16. Right. Obviously, the laws are different now, but. You know, in the 50s, a 16-year-old in the Marines, he experienced so much racism. He was fighting almost every day. They did some terrible things, like urinating on him while he sleeps, spitting mm-hmm. on him. And he himself carried a lot of that negative energy, toxicity right. around for many years from those racial experiences he had. And he had some issues with his father as well. They got into this huge fight in the 70s where his dad wound up cutting him on the arm. They didn't speak until a few years before my father transitioned, but then he had some issues with my grandmother as well, so he carried mm-hmm. all this toxicity around, and I really yeah. believe a lot of those issues he experienced early on led to his drinking issues, his way right. to kind of put a band-aid over things, so that was definitely tough to deal with as a child when he was around, but I, without doubt, if he was there through high school, because through high school was when I really, really kind of fell off, if you will, it got involved in some things I shouldn't have been involved mm-hmm. in, and I respected him so much. I know that I wouldn't have been doing those things. But again, I thank God for it all. That was just my purpose, my experience. Right. You know, I believe in manifestation. And one thing I've learned actually recently is not only do we have the ability to manifest and create while we're here in our lives now, but
right.
the truth of the matter is we created everything before we even got here. So everything I experienced with those traumatic experiences. Mm-hmm. I agree to that. I created that before I even arrived on this earth. So I'm at peace with it all.
Yeah. I definitely get that. I know that being a life purpose coach, a lot of the trauma that we do feel, we carry it around with us. And sometimes, you know, we even replicate some things that we've experienced and we don't know why we do it, you know.
Yes.
Just when you were talking about your father pouring the oil on you, that could have been something that he saw or happened to him in a similar way. And it was something that he replicated, not thinking that you were his child, you know. And we carry these traumas around, and it's indeed, I talked about this earlier, the pandemic made us sit down and get clear on ourselves. We didn't have the outside world, you know, to say, work, you know, this or that or this. We weren't running around. It was, we were in one spot facing ourselves. And I think it's so very important that you said this, is that you faced yourself, because I don't believe that we talk about introvert, extrovert. I don't believe a 5-year-old wants to be an introvert. Just don't believe it.
Exactly.
I don't believe it. I just don't believe that they want to, oh, I don't want to talk to anybody ever again. I don't believe they make that up in their minds. And that's when things cognitively start to develop in us. You know, your character starts forming, you know. But when I say that, is that, why I say that is that we have to unpack those things. That's when things start detrimentally starting to change for us. We have to look back way as far as that. No matter if we're 80, no matter if we're 50, no matter if we're 40, 30, we have to look as far back. What is it that I'm doing? Now I'm doing something that's not conducive to my life, to my health. Now I'm doing it. Now why? What's making me do that? And I think you did this so well. Like you really didn't need my help as a host, but you unpacked your book altogether, and you shared your life, and we want to thank you. The audience and I want to thank you for doing that. One thing I do want to get to, because now the hour's late, but I do want to ask this last question about the book. It's on page 104. And you say, what is the right thing, the proper thing? I've asked myself that question more often than I can count. Undoubtedly, it is a difficult dwelling in a society where the definition of proper can run counter to what God desires for us. Sometimes it is effortlessly to do the proper thing, and at the other times it takes every ounce of courage that you possess. Can we talk about the proper thing?
Yeah, please. So when I talk about the proper thing, right? That may be something or things that are socially acceptable, right? Mm-hmm. Things that are quote unquote politically correct, you know. So, within my family, the right thing or the proper politically correct thing to do is go to church,
right?
Believe in Christ, believe that Christ is our Savior, right. And essentially be a Christian,
right?
Right. Now, as I spoke on earlier, I've gotten away from that,
right.
I'm no longer a Christian. I'm practicing this spirituality.
Right.
And that is something that God pulled me towards to do.
Right.
And that totally goes against, again, what Christianity says, what my family says, what a lot of my friends say.
Right.
But I had to have the courage to be able to step into that,
right,
and to live that. And you know what? That was not easy. And it was a long time where I said to myself, Justin, is this the right thing you're doing?
Right. Me too.
Am I being tricked by Satan?
Right. All of this stuff. Yeah.
All these things. You know, exactly.
All the stuff that people told you, you're questioning yourself, you know? Yeah, I know.
Right. The programming.
Yeah, the programming is like really going on. You're going against everything. It clicks in. And I like the correction you made about God himself, because I said that to someone. I said, I can't put him on the same level. I can't put God on the same level as me. So saying himself, I don't know that to be true. Itself is everything, you know?
Exactly.
It's everything.
Well said.
It's everything.
Well.
You know, it covers.
Yeah, and I tell people, God is everything.
He is everything. He's us. He's
truly everything.
Everything.
Like, I'm out here in Arizona. I see mountains when I look out my window. God is the mountains. God is the air we breathe.
Yeah.
God is the ocean.
Yeah.
God is everything.
Everything.
Everything. He's in me. He's in you.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing relationship.
It is.
It's a relationship that I would have never had if I didn't face those fears,
right,
of doing things kind of unorthodox, doing things that I was programmed
to do. Yeah.
And since I've done that, and I tell you what, you talk about freedom, you talk about liberation.
Yeah.
You talk about a sense of self and knowing
myself. Oh yeah.
I mean, it's there. It really is.
Oh my gosh.
And it just goes back again to what it says on the back of my book, the death and the renewal, the rebirth.
Right.
You know, and it's just been this amazing life that I've had. A lot of people that read the book, they may not say that. They may look at those traumas. But again, those traumas, those experiences,
right,
were all necessary, right, to bring me to where I am now.
Right. And the oneness
yes,
that you feel. I spent 29 years in church only to not know God, not to have
exactly
an idea,
right,
you know.
Right.
And And when I was coming out of it, I was at a prayer session with the church. It was, everybody's praying. And so I heard my name come out of the side room. So I thought someone was calling me. So I just got up and I went back and I saw there was nobody there. And I'm like, what's going on? And I heard it again, like really loud. And I'm just looking around, I'm saying, there's nobody, and I looked out the window to see if somebody was outside, maybe saying my name, wanted to talk to me or something, whatever. No one was there. I then turned around to go back to continue to pray with everyone else. And the Spirit literally said, look at that. And so I'm standing there looking, and so everyone's, you know, praying, they're speaking in what we call the other tongues, but we want to get in that. That's another subject. Another tongue. And then they were, you know, spitting and, you know, on the ground banging and just a whole lot of theatrical things that were happening. And literally when I say the veil kind of fell off my eyes, it really did at that point. And it said, pray in the Spirit. And that startled me, and this is not the Spirit. That's how God spoke to me. And that was my first awakening to God is just not the behaviors that we've been taught. And on the way, I guess, on the way out, and I had to learn how to get out, you know, because you've done it so many years, you know, you're 29 years, you're going to church 3 days a week, you know, and you're doing all these things, you become so methodical, like a robot, and then when you don't do it, you get like, oh, stuck, like, oh, God, I'm supposed to be going this way, and I'm going this way, you know, it's like, it's so much pressure, but on the way out, God spoke to me and said, Christianity was not intended for us. That's not what he wanted. That's not what the example of Jesus was about. And I was like, it just floored me. So I understand your freedom of being in the spirit realm. I've been on this route since 2007. And I had a traumatic car accident and my, the engine of my car came on my chest, punctured both of my lungs, broke my hip. My bones were crushed on the right side. I had like traumatic injury to my face. They didn't think I was going to make it, but I always tell everybody after that, I learned so much about God during that time. He had to break up the fallow ground. You know, and he had to put, because, you know, remember the scripture that says, you can't put new wine in old wineskin. So I had to be a whole new person in order to receive what the position I'm in now, and that's spirituality. And that's a different plane, and people don't see it the way you do. And now all I say, you will one day, you will. You will.
That's right. That's it.
You
that's
will see it one day. And I, you know, so I don't thwart anybody's, you know, people ask me, you know, how did you get there? I was like, I don't think you want to go the way I came. No, you don't want to come the way I came. But I said, but when you get there, it's going to be the most satisfying thing that you've ever had in your life. You could have 10 cents and you believe that tomorrow, if you had a bill to pay, God is going to instruct the universe to give you what you need.
It happens every time.
The universe doesn't let you down. Never. And especially if you vibrate that vibration, you know.
Yeah.
We as a Black community have to learn to vibrate in that, not in lack, but in that there's power in what we think and what we speak. We often speak the wrong things, you know. We're creators. And we don't want to believe it because then we have to dispel all that other stuff that we've...
Exactly. Exactly. People don't want to do that.
They don't want to give it up.
That's the reason.
They don't want to give it up.
It's all fear-based. It's all fear-based.
It
right?
is. It is.
That's not the right thing to do. How's my family going?
Right,
how
right.
How are friends going to view?
Or, Justin, it could be, now at this point, it's ego. I put too much into this. Yeah, I put too much into this. What are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm not letting that go. I did all this work and, you know, and people looking up to me. I'm not going to change. You know, so it becomes ego after a while. But I really thank God and the universe in general for making things happen for me that I am in that spiritual realm. Me and you have gone through the same exact things. Mine's a little earlier, but I'm glad that you're there. I am so glad that you're there. And it's good to, see a male and his wife. I didn't meet her yet, but to see it from that perspective. And when I opened your book and it said the eye of the Father, I thought of in the eye of the beholder. I thought of that, you know, love, you know, I thought of that. I was like, oh, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And I was like, oh, same difference.
Same difference.
Well, thank you so much. This is so exciting for our audience, Justin and I, to get to know about your book, and we want to be able to get your book. I have your book already. Thank you so very much. I read it in an hour. It's very readable. Tell us how to obtain a copy of this?
Amazon would be your go-to, unless you live in the Phoenix area. I have it in a couple bookstores here in the Phoenix area, but most people get it on Amazon. You can find it on Amazon, paperback for $11.99.
Okay. And audience, it's called the In the Eye of the Father. In the Eye of the Father. Okay, so right now is the second part of the show, and we want to pivot this now, because now we know all about your book, and we know about you. But we want to know, now we want to get really, really into, like, knowing who you are. What's your favorite basketball team?
I'm not into basketball as much
okay.
as I used to. I used to be the biggest basketball fan, but basketball became a little predictable for me. I'm into college more than I am pros, but
right.
I'm from Detroit. So
okay.
I'm one of my Pistons, you know?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, you can't go against that. You can't go against that.
Right. That's right.
Especially if this is, oh, you know, people hear you saying it. So stay with that.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. Okay. Yes. You know, I heard that you said something about you loved football. I heard that. Okay. Because I'm a football fan. I love the season of football. I am like the biggest guy. I got the blue things on. You know, I'm colored up. I'm excited about football. I'm like, if no one's here with me, I got my dip, you know, my dip and my chips and my, you know, buffalo wings, and I'm got the speakers on the television, and I'm screaming. So I'm the biggest fan of football. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, football, that's my sport. I played football when I was a kid in high school. My brothers played football. And I've just always been a huge football family. As far as pro teams, definitely the Lions, but I like the Cardinals now, too. I've been
following
them for the last couple of years.
Okay.
And of course, go Blue Michigan Wolverines. That's my college team.
So. Okay. So what is the best compliment you ever received?
A simple thank you. Thank you for helping me. There's a young man who I met through a mutual friend back in, I think, 2020. Yeah, that was in 2020. No, I'm sorry. This is 21, February of 21.
Okay.
And this person was going through a lot. He separated from his significant other. They had a child together, and his girlfriend at the time, they separated, and he became homeless. He wasn't able to see his kids.
Yeah, yeah.
He just didn't have a job. He was just really down on his luck.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asked to be a mentor to him.
Okay.
A mutual friend. And
all right.
He has really, over the last year, changed his life for the better. This young man is, he has his own place. In fact, soon after obtaining his own place, he got an even bigger and better place that was better for him. He is now able to, he has his kids every weekend. He sees his kids every weekend now. he's found some solid work, a pretty decent job that he enjoys doing. And I'm not taking credit for it, for his
job. Oh, no.
Right? That's the father working through me to be able to tell him what he needed to hear at the time.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, and he told me, I'll probably say a little bit earlier this year, he just said, you know what, Justin, I just want to thank you. You came into my life at the perfect time when I needed it. And you told me some things. He said a lot of things that you told me I didn't want to hear, but you were straight up with me.
Yeah.
And you really helped me. You mentored me, so thank you.
Yeah, and a simple thank you.
I thank God that I was able to, so that's the biggest compliment I've received. I was able to leave my footprint on his life and help change the trajectory of his life. Yeah. And that just not only makes his life better, but his kids' life better.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, it essentially affects generations. So
It's called writing in the book of life. You've written in somebody's book, you know. What if you could build? If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would that be, and why?
Wow, you have the best questions. This is good. If I could have a billboard and write anything on it, what would it be, and why?
Yeah.
My first thought is to have something in regards to maybe asking a question or making people think about self and healing.
Okay.
I think that would be something like that, to something in that regard to really make people think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we all need healing to a certain extent.
Yeah. Every day, sometimes.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I really believe once people learn about self, like you've been able to do and I've been able to do, and a lot of others, I think that those that are not aware, once they go through that healing process and learn about self and spirituality, they can do what we've done, right, is have that death and that rebirth to change the trajectory of their life forever.
Right.
So I think that's important.
That's good. Final question. What would you pick for your last meal?
Hey. You know what? That's funny because... I love bacon, but I haven't made bacon or any type of pork in about 6-7 years now, and I haven't ate red meat or chicken in about 2 years now.
Okay.
I'm doing a plant-based thing, a pescatarian seafood.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, I would have me about half a pound of bacon. I would have me a couple of lobster tails. I would have me a grilled New York strip and filet.
Oh boy, you go out in style.
I would have some of my mama's banana pudding.
Oh Lord, you sound like my son. You sound like my son. Oh gosh, he loved that banana pudding.
Yes, that would do it for me.
Well, that sounds delightful. Very filling, but very delightful.
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's been really delightful and really informative and refreshing and empowering to speak with you today, Justin Williams. And your final thoughts, what's the best tip you can share with anyone in the audience today on how to just move forward in the writing a book, you know, as being an author? What would you give them to move them forward? I would say.
My first piece of advice would be to face your fears. Don't be scared of the fears. There's just a lot of fear, a lot of doubt. You're going to go through, at least during my process of writing my book, I went through so many emotions, a little fear, a little doubt.
Yeah.
Do I really want to do this? Is this the right time?
Right.
And I tell you what, the time is never better than now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, look to the spirit to guide you as well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a huge advocate of meditation, which has definitely been life-changing for me. I encourage people to start meditating. If you have those questions or you seem stuck in that process of putting the book together, or even if you're looking to take the first step and don't know what to do, start with the spirit. Go get in that meditation, pray, whatever you have to do to get alone, and find out what needs to be done, and always know that that's not going to come externally. That's going to come from the internal.
Exactly.
Right? You have everything in you. That's the gift. We've been gifted with everything we need to deal with any and everything that we face in this life here on
Earth.
You know,
absolutely.
And it's just all about becoming aware of that. And
absolutely.
Once you're able to do that, you are a new person. You'll have all the answers you need to your questions. So I'm real big on handling or controlling fear, because fear is one of the main things that really prevent people from living, as they say, their best life.
Yes.
And stepping into their purpose and stepping into their greatness.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you very much. What do you have on the horizon that you can share with the audience? And please let us know how we can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. So one of the things I started in December of 2020 is my show, the Hidden Gateway Podcast. I've been doing it about a year and a half, whatever it is. And it's been such an amazing experience, a part of my healing process as well, right? Because remember, I was this quiet, introverted guy, so this helped me kind of get out in front of people and express myself, et cetera.
Wonderful.
And I've been very blessed with the universe. I've been doing so much, and it's almost as if the universe meets me halfway, right? And I've been blessed, and I've had some really phenomenal guests on there. I've interviewed people such as Dr. Robert Malone, who invented the MMR. That goes into the vaccines, Dr. Mm-hmm. Peter McCullough, Robert Kennedy Jr., Dr. Christiane Northup, even Tommy Chong from Cheech and Chong. So that's been really fun. So they can check me out. I do a weekly show. My website is thehiddengateway.com.
Okay.
Obviously, there's the book that they can find on Amazon. And I also created an organization last year called Tangelic.
Mm-hmm.
And with that organization, what I do is help people move past traumatic experiences and step into their purpose in life, etc. And I'm currently working with another similar organization here in the Phoenix area. Now, my organization, I do have a specific interest with working with the homeless.
Okay.
Have gone through things, but I'm open to help anyone. You know,
absolutely.
Again, the homeless, and that website is under construction. That website should be up and running within the next week or so. But yeah, definitely my website, and I have, you know, the social media as well, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. my personal as well as thehiddengateway.com and Tangelic. So.
Okay, wonderful. And that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks for listening, audience. Thanks for, you know, supporting us. And if you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, leave us a rating or a comment or review. And remember, you can press the button and actually leave a comment, or if you have a question that you'd like to ask Justin Williams or myself, Edna White, you can do so. Now remember, you can catch up to me with all the latest news on generational habits and traumas on Facebook, on Instagram, and Twitter at EJW Coaching. Thanks again, and I'll remember to always say something nice to you, but I will always have the real deal. This is Edna White and my guest, Justin Williams, signing off. Bye for now.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.